This is the State of Things from Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Thank you. The presence of a likely carcinogen in the Cape Fear River Basin is prompting concerns about water safety. 1,4-dioxane was detected over the summer in Greensboro's wastewater in levels 2,700 times higher than EPA limits for drinking water. Officials say the chemical has not affected the city's own drinking water, but the chemical did flow downstream to communities including Pittsboro and Fayetteville. A Triad company, Shamrock Environmental Corporation, has been identified as the source of the chemical release. The North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality also announced recently that it's investigating elevated levels of 1,4-dioxane in Reidsville's wastewater discharge. Carrie Brown is WFDD's education and environment reporter. She's been following the story, and she joins us now. Carrie, welcome.
Thank you.
So first of all, what is 1,4-dioxane?
Yes. It's a chemical that's used for industrial use a lot of times. Manufacturing, anything from textiles to plastics, it's big on as well. It's also used in some household products as well as even trace amounts in cosmetics. But here, we're talking about it in water. We're exposed in several ways, but in water, in drinking water.
So we're assuming that it got in as a byproduct of some production process. And I understand it's very difficult to filter out of the water once it gets in there. Is that right?
It is. What's interesting about this particular chemical is that it loves water. So it doesn't break down easily. And so you could have a high level, and it's going to maybe dilute a little bit as it moves downstream, but it's still moving downstream. So that is a concern here as well.
And we're calling it a likely carcinogen. What do we know about the health impact?
Yes. The EPA has labeled that. And what we do know, there have been some tests in animals. It has linked it to issues with kidneys and, your liver and that sort of thing. Industrial occupation in high exposure rates, they've seen, things like miscarriages and stillbirths and things like that. There needs to be obviously a lot more study with this particular chemical, but we know in high amounts that, this can be a big concern.
All right, so talk about the high amounts found in the wastewater in Greensboro. When was it discovered and how much?
In August is when they measured this, which you referenced earlier, about 2,700 times what the EPA recommends as a health advisory level, which is 0.35 parts per billion. Well, what does that look like? That's like a drop of water in three Olympic-sized swimming pools, and so your risk of cancer would be 1 in 1,000,000 over a lifetime if you were exposed to that level on a daily basis. So when you think about that, you're like, well, that's, maybe not that much. But when you look at the levels that are have been found recently in Greensboro, in Reidsville, and you also think about that, it's not regulated per se. So this has been a problem, what I'm told. It's not just an emerging contaminant that the EPA is asking municipalities to test for. I know researchers who tell me that they've been measuring this in the Cape Fear River Basin since the 80s.
No.
So you have to think about how long it's been in the water, if it doesn't break down, and the levels, who knows how much has been going in for how long.
Well, you say, okay, so it's a likely carcinogen, but we don't know enough about it, but we still get to use it, so it finds its way into the products we use. Are there rules about dumping it into the water supply?
When the incident happened in Greensboro, Shamrock Environmental was correct. They didn't break any state or federal laws because it's not regulated. There is that health advisory level from the EPA, and North Carolina has adopted that. What North Carolina can do is really come down to the cities and the municipalities, because a lot of times they're in charge of the discharge programs, and so the wastewater treatment discharge programs. So that is something that the state could be a little bit tougher on, I guess. But also I think you have to look at the source, because you can treat as much as you want, but you have to realize that it's not going to stop the source. So this is where regulation has come up. It's been a big discussion. Whether or not we'll see that obviously remains to be seen. But also, this is not easy to get out of water. From what a researcher told me recently, there are only two communities that they know of in the state that can remove it effectively, Wilmington and Cary. It's very expensive. And you can get a reverse osmosis treatment, which is system, which is recommended to remove it as much as possible. Those are extremely expensive, and the average person may not be able to afford that, like from the high hundreds to, you know, thousands of dollars, depending on if you install it yourself or you hire someone professionally. So it's a big concern here, because even researchers say that they were alarmed by these recent levels.
So we're talking about, we said that a company named Shamrock Environmental Corporation is the source, but, mm-hmm. but there's a chain of custody question here, right? They didn't generate it. Their job is to clean up environmental waste, right?
They did not. They received it from a client who did not disclose that 1,4-dioxane was in the water. We had about 14,000 gallons of this treat, you know, this wastewater that was made its way into the Cape Fear River Basin. You know, Greensboro Wastewater Treatment Plant found it because they're required by law to test monthly for emerging contaminants. And so this came up. Now, because of what happened, they, as well as, you know, Greensboro, as well as Reidsville, have to test weekly. So that way, if there is a problem, they can move quicker to find out. Greensboro did come under scrutiny for not reporting it soon, because
there was about a one-month delay.
Yes, there was about a month
there?
Delay, but they were within the legal limits of reporting it because they have that month to do it. There are lots of communities downstream who are concerned and would actually like to see some sort of regulation to notify them soon when something happens. But this is all part of this big discussion, and a lot of people are concerned right now. They're looking at ways to, you know, protect their drinking water, and you know, we're starting to see this at a state level really bubble up to a big discussion.
Are there any requirements for this company that gave the stuff that had the dioxane in it? Do they have to disclose that? Is that something they're required to do?
They don't. I mean, what's happening is with the wastewater discharge permits, that's what the state's really looking at right now, you know, is to, you know, adding that and for that to be a requirement. But they didn't break any laws here. Mm. So you have to wonder if it can make its way through a company and then our wastewater treatment plants, where is it caught at?
Well, it does seem strange to me, just hearing this story, that you wouldn't have to test the material that you receive from a source before you dump it into my water supply. Shouldn't you? Okay, they didn't tell you. You need to test that before you put it in my water.
That's a great point, Frank, and I think that that's really come into this discussion big time lately. You know, who should be responsible for, you know, being the gateway, first of all, to this? And I think that's where you're going to hear more about regulation. I mean, sometimes regulation too much can hurt industry. We know that. But in this case, there really isn't a lot of it with that particular chemical, and so I think you have that being brought to the table. They would like to see the industry come into this discussion as well in the meantime to really, you know, get a hold of this situation.
I want to talk about another big story you've been covering in the Triad. Winston-Salem Forsyth County School Board, the Board of Education, recently voted against mandatory African-American history class for high school students. Tell us about the push initially, mm-hmm. and where that came
sure.
from.
Earlier this spring, there was a couple groups that came forward before the board to voice that they really wanted to see this. This has kind of been discussion over the past couple of years. Some of these groups were involved with the Confederate statue removal, as well as getting the name of the Dixie Classic Fair changed. They were pretty vocal about that. But you also had a lot of community members, too, who were in support of this. So that's where it became originally. And then fast forward to the recent board meeting that we had. The board put it up for vote, and so it was a 7-1 vote that they decided not to. There were a lot of people who were angry about that because they feel like this is needed, you know, throughout the year, and so they feel like it would help a lot of, you know, black youth with identity, and just overall they would like to see more than just talking about, like, slavery and civil rights. So so there were some people who weren't happy, but the new superintendent, Angela Hairston Pringle, or Pringle Hairston, I should say, she is the first black female leader of the school district, and she said she wanted to go about this a little bit of a different way, kind of offer an alternative. It's called an infusion program. It builds off what the district already has, but, you know, she really takes it up a notch, and what she is recommending and what they approved was that they're going to have black history available, African-American studies, in the high schools. And so they already offer it as an elective. So I want to make that clear. That's been, you know, offered. But if you don't have enough students sign up for it, then the class isn't there. So this changes that. This says if you have five students signed up, you have to offer it. It also does things like instead of half a credit, it says let's make it a credit. So that'd be more attractive for students. There's an advisory committee. There are a lot of things to kind of go ahead and get this rolling. And I don't think this is off the table. I talked with some board members afterward, and they told me that, you know, they feel like for now this is good. There's also some pause because of cost and resources and just trying to figure out right now. You have students who are required a lot for graduation. And so they want to make sure that, you know, from the state level that they're meeting all of that before they mandate something. And I think you're going to see this as well, a push, I guess, from the state to maybe look at this again. What's interesting about this, too, is this infusion program also includes Latino studies, American Indian studies. So it's kind of takes a more of a multicultural approach.
Carrie Brown, WFDD Education and Environment Reporter. Carrie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we look back at the 40th anniversary of the Greensboro Massacre, but first, the music of Greensboro-based duo M and Ty, and I'm going to let you hear them before, but before that, I have to tell you that this is the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. M and Ty.
You might say I'm a wild one, I've always been on the run, never answered to anyone until I met you. You might say that I'm free, always choose who I want to be, and I'll make my own company until you met me. But I could be your Marilyn Monroe, mama, little white dress coming up too high. Take me for a spin, honey, aren't you gonna paint the town red with me tonight? Oh, 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 red with me tonight. Ooh, so baby, let's have some fun. Or we could go on the run, or you could look through anyone with those emerald eyes. 'Cause it's just you and me, and our date with destiny.